You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Does it mean anything to anyone in the room here that Neve Campbell is announcing that she is returning to the Scream series? I don't know how you feel about movies and movie franchises, but Scream is one of the great modern day horror franchise, certainly, and just overall franchise, I think. Why'd you wave it off, Amin?
Enough with Scream. Enough. There's only so many times you could do the meta. Oh, this is like just all the other horror movies, and then it's for meta. Oh, it's just like all the other Scream movies. Enough. What's your favorite scary movie? You know what my favorite scary movie is? One that isn't just recycling the same goddamn movie over and over again.
I certainly can't watch scary movies. No. Don't know about the rest of you.
No. Just can't do it?
Just can't do it. Terrifies me. I have nightmares. Last night I was convinced that the scary monster from Stranger Things was in my hotel bathroom. Wow. And that's a show for children.
What is the worst horror movie that you have happened upon that made you fear all horror movies?
First of all, I knew this about myself before I ever saw a horror movie, but it was The Ring in seventh grade. It strikes fear in my heart to talk about it, Dan.
Rosemary's Baby. Terrified. It's the only horror movie that I've ever been scared at. Like, legitimately, like, I got to turn
it was
this
Nightmare on Elm Street for me as a 36-year-old.
After I watched Sixth Sense for the first time, I didn't leave my bedroom after my parents were asleep for, like, 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, I hated a dark hallway.
I was confused. Ago, who was alive? Who was dead? I had no idea what was happening.
I famously, Stugatz, called that Bruce Willis was dead, like, in, like, 20 minutes of watching the movie.
Oh, you're so smart. Ruined the movie for everybody.
Wow.
Oh, man.
What are you doing?
Middle of the theater, I was just like, he's dead.
Oh, how annoying.
Said in the middle of the theater.
I did.
Stood up.
You must have read it before.
No. This is before you could read things before.
Another actor better than then. Yeah. Giamatti.
People couldn't read.
Recent development. I Know What You Did Last Summer for me.
What?
That was I like so that movie.
I saw it when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
That's bad. Jesus. Parenting.
Kindergarten.
That's a scary movie. That's a
5 year old. Yes.
A 5 year old learning about guilt.
Exactly. And then I went to Catholic school, and then, oh my God, the combination of the two. I was just afraid if I ever did anything wrong, someone was going to come hunt me down and kill me with their hook hand or something.
But then you read the Da Vinci Code, and everything was good after that.
It's a gag.
I don't know how many screams.
Just the papacy trying to kill me.
I don't know how many screams there have been. I don't know.
Too many screams.
How many saws there have been.
Too many saws. Mm.
But I think once you get into the 8, 9, 10 of anything except Billy's Beloved, Fast and the Furious,
calm down
there, Dan. that anything is going to get bad, and any of them are going to come with the complaint that it's not as good as it used to be, except for perhaps Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh! Woo! There we go. Wow. Now it means a week. Let's talk about Curb.
You better not spoil this shit too, Amin.
So good. I'm only 4 episodes in, but it has just been banger after banger.
4 might have been one of my favorite episodes of all time.
So good.
He's there. Look, there's been some slippage in recent seasons, right? When they came back after that long hiatus, it's like, I mean, it's funny, but it's not quite what it once was. But it kind of found its footing there in the second season of the return from hiatus. But then this season is legitimately one of the best seasons. He's going out. He's emptying all the chambers. Everybody's on top of their game. I submit to you that Vince Vaughn is the greatest Curb Your Enthusiasm actor.
Wow.
Not playing himself.
What? Wow.
Not playing himself.
Wow.
Other than Marty Funkhauser, Super Dave. That's the only guy.
And that is a big one.
But he's not with us anymore. So
right.
Yeah. Vince Vaughn's number one.
Mm-hmm. Living.
I wouldn't even put him top five.
Yeah, no.
Name some.
Wow.
Name some.
I'll make a list.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say, I would argue Vince Vaughn, top 10 actors of all time.
Yeah. Oh, no. I won't go that far. No.
Susie Green.
Susie plays Susie.
No, she plays Susie Eisman.
No, but she plays Susie.
Or whatever.
Susie's like that in real life. Jeff's like that in real life. And I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about the people.
Cousin Andy.
No, Cousin Andy's nowhere near Vince Vaughn. Because Vince Vaughn is an improv genius. He's just throwing things back at Larry. Whatever you say, he's got
Leon
something.
Black.
Oh, yeah, J.B. Smooth.
Dude, like the best character in the show.
Ooh. The whole, this is not a spoiler, but the whole thing with his balls hanging out of his shorts.
Oh, that was great.
Was like legitimately so funny. I texted a meme to tell him that I saw it.
The best part about this season has been all the callbacks to prior seasons.
Yes.
So Long Ball Larry is a callback.
I just rattled off four, though. Pretty good.
No. Jeff and Susie don't count.
Long Ball Larry.
Why do Jeff and Susie not count?
Larry Walker.
They're being themselves.
I have a theory of how it ends, but I don't want to spoil it for anyone. And other people have kind of run with this theory also.
Wait, I have a theory too.
He goes to jail.
Yes.
Like the Seinfeld finale. He's doing the Seinfeld finale
Everyone
again.
Everyone has that theory apparently.
He's doing the Seinfeld finale, but this time it's actually better because the Seinfeld finale, they went to jail because they didn't do the Good Samaritan thing. This time he's going to go to jail because he did a Good Samaritan thing. So it's the opposite.
Well, did he do a Good Samaritan thing?
This isn't a spoiler, by the way, because everyone in the studio is freaking out right now. This happens in like the first 5 minutes of the first episode of the season. So
trial?
It's okay, guys. Yeah. Settle.
No.
I just hear people out there going, la, la, la.
This is a theory, too.
Is it a Good Samaritan thing if he didn't mean to do it?
I mean...
That's the whole thing of the bit, though, where he's getting all this credit for something he didn't mean.
Yeah, have to take credit. I mean,
oh no, the Stugatz is incredibly strong. Taking credit for something he didn't mean to do.
I misread Billy's mischief there. I thought that he was coming in to destroy all things. Curb Your Enthusiasm.
What? What do you mean?
You got into the conversation a little bit late. I didn't realize that you were following along, and we're going to have a critic's appraisal of whatever, wherever it is we finish with this story, because. It's one of the great television writers ever, at the height of his powers, trying to age with his last show when he didn't have to do anything after Seinfeld. In this political comedy climate, like it's a pretty high bar to reach. Amin is ready to criticize everything.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think Larry David's doing things for Amin's approval.
Guess again. Might I remind you that I once shared seats. On a plane with the Ted Danson.
Hey!
Yep.
You shared a seat with him?
Yep. Well, I mean, he was my seatmate.
He was next to you.
He was next to me. And so then I shared a row with him.
And how did that go?
It went great. It went great because at first I was like, you know what? I'm not going to acknowledge him, right? All these people are coming on the plane. Oh, we love you so much. And I said, I'm not going to acknowledge him. And then I said, wait a second. I'm going to wait for one of these people to come. I mean, I love you on ESPN.
That didn't happen.
That was the first time. Every flight I'm on, someone ever saw, I love your work. This is the first time it didn't happen. I wanted to down.
Every flight you've been on, someone comes up and says, Amin, I love your work. And you're hoping they did it in front of Ted Danson.
And they didn't. I wanted to exercise my dominance the one time. Right. So anyways, then we take off. He says something about what I was eating. I was like, I got it from this place. It's really great. Whatever. We had some small talk. We take off. Then maybe a third left in the flight. I said, hey, by the way, I love you and Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he was so happy. He's like, everyone always says cheers or the good place, or whatever. It's like, you're the first person. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm cool like that. And then I told him Charles Barkley's my friend. He's like, really? And it...
That was great.
Me and Ted Danson?
So that worked. Charles Barkley's my friend.
So if Cheryl Hines is the first lady, does that mean Aaron Rodgers gets a guest spot on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard. All these high-paid analysts, I don't want to mention names, TNT, ESPN, you know, oh, yeah, they are dead. They cannot, they're not going to make it, you know. Even if they win in, if they lose in Miami.
I need to calm you down.
If they lose in Miami, they don't got a chance in Boston. Or they are going to have their ass, you know what, in Boston, you know.
Stugats.
They were wrong. Are they going to lose their job? No. Are they going to get a cut in pay? No. What are they going to do? Keep predicting what is the obvious. They are going to say, oh, the Nuggets are going to win. Oh, Denver, the altitude. And you know what? The Heat are going to win it all.
This is the Dan Levitard Show with the Stugats.
He's a two-time NBA champion. He's a four-time All-Star. And I always thought he was interesting. I didn't sort of understand, I mean, how it is that he did some of the things that he did. I knew he had to be smart. I knew he had to be tough. But I was sort of confused by how can he control a game at that size.
He was also talented.
Yes, and had everything on a team that you would want to win a championship. So Rajon Rondo is with us, and he's the latest addition to our new partners at All the Smoke Productions. We will tell you to find them on YouTube, All the Smoke. So, Rajon, thank you for joining us. And I just wanted to start with those Celtics teams because we watched them, we admired them in Miami, we respected them, we learned to hate them. And it seems like you guys, Boston and Miami, anytime I Paul Pierce's talked to, Garnett, Udonis, that none of that anger from those competitive battles you guys have had, it seems like none of it's gone away, that you like still wear the scars because you guys were fighting for the top of the sport.
No, I wouldn't say that. You know, we're very competitive gentlemen, and that's part of the nature of the game. Me, myself, personally, anything I do, I want to compete and be the best, but that's in the past. I've actually played with, you know, LeBron and D-Wade since then, so there's no hard feelings, and I've actually won one with LeBron, so that's in the past.
What can you tell us about the time playing with Dwayne Wade? Because it seemed like in Chicago, it seemed like those were three veteran players playing, very different personalities, playing with a bunch of players who weren't veterans, and you were brought into an interesting set of circumstances.
To me, it was a great experience. The young fellas that was there, Denzel Valentine, Bobby Portis, all the young guys I would develop a relationship with still to this day. That work extremely hard. You know, they were hardworking young guys, and were dying to be led to understand what it was to be a professional and a champion. So along with the other two big guys, Wade and Jimmy, we had a great run. You know, I believe we would have beat Boston that year as eighth seed. Unfortunately, I broke my thumb in that series, game two, and we didn't win another game.
You mentioned Jimmy Butler. Did you think Jimmy would turn into the Jimmy that we're seeing right now with the Heat?
Absolutely. I mean, I think he was that guy even when the Bulls, like I said, we didn't get an opportunity to get far in the playoffs, but Jimmy loved the big games. He loved the big moments. You know, he's a professional at his craft. Jimmy was a hard worker, you know, back in the Bulls days. He has a lot of discipline. You know, he kind of reminded me of Kevin Garnett, how he approached the game. And so what he's doing now, I'm not surprised. Like I said, this is who he is, and he thrives in the big moments, and he wants all the pressure on himself.
I don't feel like you're allowed to say you're not surprised. I don't feel like I understand, and I mean no disrespect by this, but I can't, if I come up to you in Chicago in the locker room where you and Dwayne Wade are there, and I'm like, you know what's going to happen here? Jimmy Butler's going to lead a team to the finals, and the numbers he's going to put up are all going to be Michael Jordan's numbers. Rajon Rondo can know a lot of things without knowing that was going to happen, because none of us thought that could happen. You're telling us, no, I knew that could happen, that he could drag a team by himself to the finals like that, looking like Michael Jordan.
He averaged 24.
You know, you gotta think about it. You know, Jimmy has also one of the greatest coaches ever coached all the time as well, you know, in Spo. So the preparation that Spo's put in, I played against Spo many years. I can't say that Jimmy obviously wasn't gonna have those particular numbers, no, but the way the game has changed, you know, you see the numbers inflated. So the game has changed. The referees, the game is called differently. You know, the three balls being shot a lot more, and the way he's been able to manipulate the game and draw fouls, gets to the free throw line at all time high. But to me, Jimmy still gets to his spots. These are the same spots he gets to when I saw him working in Chicago with Chris Johnson. So no, I can't say he was going to have Michael Jordan like his numbers, but at the same time, his willpower and, you know, he's a dog. I mean, he's one of the most dominant guys when it comes to, you know, man-to-man matchups. You know, he wants all the smoke. his mindset, along with Spo and then the guys around him, you know, everybody bought in, understand that he was the leader of the team, and you know, those guys make shots.
Rajon, Charlotte Wilder, resident Celtics fan, which is good because there is not enough representation of Boston fans in national sports media. Okay. Are you in touch with guys on the team now? And like, how are they feeling? Because obviously they're the best team in the league. I have terrifying feelings of like it's going too well. What do you know about?
It's a little weird the way that people think that the only thing that can derail the Celtics are that they're not as mentally tough as Jimmy Butler. It feels like that's the only criticism you can hear of what can undo the Celtics.
Ooh, I don't know. I keep in touch with Sam Cassell and Phil Pressey. They're on the staff, and you know, that good friend of mine. Phil was my rook, and I was damn near Sam's rook. So full circle moment. I do keep in touch from time to time. Not any particular individual players, but I played at least with like seven guys on the team. Drew Holiday is one of my favorite teammates of all time, and I thought that was a great addition, and we're seeing it now with the way they're running this year. But they obviously they have a shot. They have a really good opportunity to get it done this year, and I don't think Joe gets enough credit. You know, Joe's kicking ass as far as his X and O's and the way he's executing down the stretch. A lot of people may not like his thinking or the way he's substitution pattern in some games, but at the end of the day, they're still the team to beat, I believe.
Rajon, thank you. For the team to beat was a little bit better than they have a chance. Okay, you need. I'm gonna coach you up here. Yeah. I'm gonna coach you up here in the media game, in the take all business, right. In the take business. Okay,
go ahead.
To
Dan.
Sell to just Stugatz, I need your help here. You're the take master.
Yep.
To say that Celtics have a shot, Rajon, not good enough. Not to say they have a shot is unacceptable, and we're going to need you to do better than that.
You have to say, Rajon, they have to win it this year or break up the team. Something like that.
Yes. You got to get something.
Right.
We
fire someone.
Fire somebody. Right. Trade somebody. You've learned nothing from Kendrick Perkins. You've learned nothing from how Kendrick Perkins does it.
That's not me. That's not me, but
now you
I won't say anybody has to get fired. If anything, I'll say they have to hire me. I mean, you know, along with Joe.
Fire the coach, hire me. Fire Coach Rondo. Resume.
No. I said hire me alongside Joe. I didn't say that.
Oh, come on.
What are the great untold? There's got to be something about your championship teams that most people do not know, because it is very hard, Rajon. Maybe people don't understand, right? The Warriors broke up after 4 years of winning, because winning together can be hard. And you guys got together very quickly. You did the hardest thing together. You developed lifelong bonds. You have a championship. What are the things that people don't know about those that champion Celtics team?
I think one thing that helped us glue really quickly is we went to Rome right away. We went to Rome, Italy. We all shaved our heads. Paul caught me sleeping one day in a room, and he kind of came in the room and he nicked my head. And I had a ball patch, and I wanted to whoop his, you know, but...
What in Rome?
I ended up... Huh?
When in Rome.
When in Rome. He just saw an opportunity to make a when in Rome joke.
He left
joke.
Me a window.
I yeah, mean. He did. That's right. He's
much like the Celtics, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Right. Come so, no, we went to Rome, Italy. No one spoke Italian, so we kind of was stuck with, kind of being in our rooms a lot, going to a lot of dinners and getting to know one another. Again, because the age difference was a lot. We had Sam Cassell, we had Scott Pollard, Eddie Howes, Kevin, all the older guys, and then we had a bunch of young guys, kind of implemented in Big Baby, myself, Perk, T.A. So, again, it's, being older now, understanding, you don't really clash or click a lot with a lot of young guys and vice versa. So getting that chemistry developed pretty early, the big three coming together, understanding about sacrifice and us watching them develop that type of chemistry early on and watching those guys grow was a big difference. And I believe that if we don't go to Rome that particular year preseason, we don't win it. We gel pretty quickly. Our mindset, Doc had us a great Mbutu word that we loved in the locker room, and we visualized and we talked about it every day. The rookies had to do a presentation on Mbutu, and I think we bought in, and I think that's the key. We bought in right away. We handled adversity early. Not much adversity, obviously. We was kicking ass early, but when we did have those times where, arguments in the locker rooms or fights in practice, they didn't get out into the media. And like I said, we went about it as professionals, and we locked in and figured out how to get it done that year.
How many?
So I believe.
How many arguments, fights? How normal is that in a highly competitive environment? Where how normal is every day has some arguments and fights in it?
Not normal, especially nowadays. I mean, I don't feel like my last couple years in the league that practices were as competitive. I believe in the 08, the 9-10 area. We had a thing called G unit runs after practice. That's where back in the day when GM was popping, we would play 1-on-1 and there was no fouls being called. I mean, guys would get up. I mean, it was crazy. Guys would get hit in the mouth, and if you weren't bleeding, it wasn't considered a foul. And that's how we competed. The first unit versus second unit, we wanted to destroy them every day. And so when we got in the game was a lot easier. And that's, as cliche as it sounds, that's how we approached it. Doc made us compete. He would have to sit Kevin Garnett on the sidelines because it got so competitive. But Kevin would, he never wanted to come out even in practice. And then when we did come out, he would run the sidelines up and down the court as if he was still in the game. So that's just kind of instilled in the young guys and made us more competitors on and off the court. And it helped our bond as well.
Can you please, though, explain to the audience, for those who don't understand what championship medal looks like, and Kevin Garnett was a kind of crazy competitive. At the height of you guys competing, maximum escalation, champion, no fouls are called here unless you're bleeding, what's the worst of that look like? What's the friends, who gets angriest with whom? Because now you're talking about, you're talking about very physical people being very competitive.
Well, the two giants that used to go at it all the time was Leon Poe and Big Baby. and it's two young guys obviously competing for a spot. So it was a little bit more to it than, it would say a Leon Poe versus a Kevin Garnett. He's already established, he's a made man, first ballot Hall of Famer. But the Leon Poe Baby matchups along with Perk, those were fun to watch from the sideline, because the guards, we would have our own games down on one end, and then the big guys would be on the opposite end playing 1-on-1. So that was fun to watch. And like I said, when we were done playing, you can hear all the shit talking in the gym on the other side. And it got very physical, but nevertheless, like I said, each game and each practice, we finished as a team. Maybe times where guys were pissed off the next couple of days, but at the end of the day, we would still come back the next day and compete just as hard. And Doc always reeled us back in to have the main goal, the focus, is to win the championship.
Dan, I don't think you understand how many shit talkers were on that roster.
Oh, my goodness.
The whole roster was shit talkers. Because everyone always thinks about Paul and KG, but Eddie House is a world-class shit talker.
James Posey's
a world-class shit talker. So Rajon, rank them for us. Who was the one seed, who was the two, and who was the three?
Wait a minute. Hold on, Rajon. Can we do this dramatically with you? Can we do it from the bottom up? Can we go 5-4? Can you organize your thoughts to go 5-4-3-2-1 dramatically? Five top five shit talkers on the champion Celtics.
Shit, even Scal's a shit talker.
let's go with
Number five.
Number five.
Number five would be James Posey. Wow. Posey talked so much shit because Posey was on when they won a championship on that team. So he would act like, you know, like, you don't know nothing, what's going on. Let me teach you how to, you know, how
he
to
had
get
a
it
ring
done.
And you did it, right?
He came in with a ring with a, yeah, he came in with a ring already. So we, you know, we gave him two of these, like, you know, so.
Number four.
Four. Because of the inexperience, I would say myself. Number four, I'll go four for me.
You were young. You were young then. You got better at it. But number four, you were about the fourth best on that team.
In 08, I was probably about the fourth best. I was still very humble, and I was trying to find my way. So I would say four for me.
All right, you were an amateur shit talker. Number three.
Yes. Yes. Three. Eddie House. Eddie House.
That's a good team of shit talkers. Eddie House isn't finishing a lot of bronze medalists in these categories.
Rajon is fourth.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Number two.
Paul Pierce.
Oh. Yeah, now we all know who number one is.
Paul was a hell of a shit talker. Like I said, he would talk shit while he's at the free throw line. I mean,
come on.
Crazy. I've heard him say some wild shit to Richard Jefferson. You know, mid dribbling through the free throw. He's talked the shit to every power forward that I've seen him play against. Joe Johnson, Josh Smith. I mean, he's up there. And again, he's my teammate, so I had to defend him and, you know, go ahead and ride with him, obviously. But he said some shit that he was like, you want to fight him right away, immediately. So, and then obviously, last but not least, number one coming in.
Most.
Kevin fucking Garnett. Wow.
Not Dan, a surprise. Dan, some names left off the list. Sam Cassell.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Tony Allen.
Oh, like, my.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm telling you, this was like the 1927 Yankees of shit talking.
Thank you. We appreciate it, Rajon. Thank you for being on the show. Good talking to you.
Appreciate you, gentlemen. Y'all have a good one.
All right. All the Smoke Productions, you need to find what they're doing on YouTube. Thank you, sir.
All right. Have a good one.
Dan Le Batard.
Jess, you can't talk about double-digit national titles when every single call of you winning the national title sounds like this. Oh, there's Chubby Checker running down the sideline. If the audio... Yeah,
that's no, not true.
Yeah, and there's a World War II veteran pitching into another white guy, and he avoids another white guy. Oh, my God, Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish, have done it again for the eighth time, only paying white people.
Stugatz.
Chubby Checker.
I'm sorry.
He's black.
He's black, and I was like, what's a white name? Chubby Checker. I picked a black. I'm sorry, man. I'm improv in here. It's a pretty cool riff.
Chubby Checker running down the side.
He spells it differently. All right. His name is Chubby. Maybe you didn't hear me correctly. His name is Chubby Checkers. There's an S at the end.
I feel like that should be the largest of fines.
Yeah, Chubby. And it's Chubby Checker. It sounds like a college football name.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
Stugatz just discovered that the first comment on anything on the internet is from an asshole.
Everyone's an asshole, it seems like.
But the first comment from everyone, there is real high comedy on the internet from just the first comment from everybody is from an asshole, because Stugatz is just now noticing that Ryan Leaf put something up of his new child, and the first comment was something along the lines of, does your daughter know you were a bust?
And Ryan responded, and it was a good job by him, saying, not yet, she's only 14 weeks, she'll find out, which is funny, but why are people assholes? I'm okay with being an asshole, but I'm not good when I see others do it. Well, I'm just not.
That begs a question. At what point, if you were a bust, do you tell your kids?
It does create the funny visual of telling a 14-week-old, like sitting the infant down.
When they figure out.
They're laying, probably, not sitting.
Mm-hmm. When they figure out that you reach very high heights of athletics, and you have to be like, oh, yeah, but didn't like fully pan out.
I think it's got to be like, mama, dada, bust. Like, that's the third word.
No, it's second word, mama, and then bust.
No, dada
is bust. Yeah.
I bet that Ryan Leaf was more successful than that commenter.
I was just going to say.
I love bust, though.
No, because Ryan Leaf went to prison. So automatically.
He was a 7-time convicted felon. I mean.
Yeah. The commenter amazingly comes out on top here.
You say that, but wouldn't Ryan Leaf be framing that to the child? Your father was very good at football all of his life.
Top 1%.
We have a fun fact about first words. Jess and I have the same first word, and it's really strange. 1, 2, 3. Backhoe.
Backhoe?
Yeah, like an excavator. Our first words. Yeah, that was both of our first words.
It's an odd first word.
Wow.
Backhoe?
I thought they said tobacco without the tuh.
That was my first word.
I thought it was like they were telling someone to get back. Backhoe! Back.
Well, actually, you know, my parents never provided context, so maybe, yeah.
But why would that be your first word?
According to my mom, we were driving by a construction site, and she was like, look, there's a backhoe. And it happened to be the first time I decided to open my mouth. And I had a toy backhoe.
Yeah.
My daughter could say excavator before I could. Because of Blippi.
You still struggle.
There's an excavator episode, and my daughter was like, what's an excavator?
You just said it wrong.
Well, that's what I mean. I can't say it. Excavator, whatever. I'm just, like I said,
back home.
My daughter showed me that I couldn't say that
word. You should watch more Blippi, it sounds like.
Yeah.
But Charlotte and I found out about our first words in one of the strangest ways possible, because we are a few years apart in age, didn't grow up in the same region of the country, never knew each other until our first job together at SB Nation, and we were typing in Slack, having a Slack conversation across the office, and someone brought up first words, and at the same time, we both typed into Slack, my first word was backhoe. Wow. And it was so spooky. We both stood up.
Yeah, we were on the opposite side of the office.
Shocking.
We didn't know each other. And just looked at each other and
I'm
were
picturing
like,
two heads popping up from cubicles.
It was. Yes,
cubicle
exactly.
Farm.
Except
it was an open office plan because startups, am I right? But yes.
we made eye contact and we were like,
wow. I forgot this is a startup with an open office floor plan.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the worst. There's nowhere to take a phone call. There's nowhere to Zoom. Cubicles, bring them back, Jack.
That is one of the most amazing origin stories I've ever seen of did we just become best friends? What are the odds that backhoe, were you spelling it the same? Was it indeed one word?
Yeah, we spelled it correctly, I will.
One word.
Backhoe. Which for me was huge.
But how the hell is that anyone's first words on anything?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. None. That's why it's an interesting story.
Yeah. Yes. That's why she told it.
I mean, you're saying that this dunk last night on Wemby.
It's two nights ago.
Two nights ago, excuse me.
Fine.
A lot of people are trying to shame Wemby for being dunked on, and you're saying it shouldn't count as a shame-filled he was dunked on
personal
situation?
Personal record book, huh?
Stugatzbook.com. By the way, I got the email.
Good.
Did you buy one? They want me to write.
Oh, dude.
All right. So.
Yeah, COB.
You also heard from his people instead of from him?
Absolutely got an email detailing what they wanted me to write.
Perfect.
Thanks for the invite, Stu.
I don't feel like this is an honor.
We're getting to you.
What's your topic, Amin?
I think it's Kevin Durant. Ooh. I think I have to.
I think that's Mike Scherzer.
Yeah, Scherzer got one of those.
I don't want to give away. Or can I give it away?
No.
Okay, I don't want to give it away.
Stu says no because he doesn't know.
You have no rights here. You just work for free. You'll hear from his people. Just shut the f*** up.
Wemby should be filled with shame. But this is not a dunk, ladies and gentlemen. Not a dunk.
We have the B-roll here for people.
Let's watch it right here. So here's the deal, right? In order for it to be a dunk, you have to touch the rim. You have to touch the rim. And I know what you're saying. Oh, Amin, what about this dunk? And what about that? No. I'll tell you how we know. Way back in the day in basketball, when they outlawed the dunk, you were not allowed to dunk. What did Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and all these guys, how did they get around it? They got around it by making shots like that. They would get up high and throw it through the rim, but they never touch the rim because technically that's not a dunk. Using that definition, this is not a dunk. It's a hell of a layup. It's an aggressive floater. That's what I like to call it, a highly aggressive
floater. That's not a poster if it's an aggressive
floater. Oh, it's a poster. It's absolutely a poster.
I'm totally with Amin on this. Your hands have to touch the rim when you dunk.
Gotta touch it.
Can you be posterized, put it on the poll, Juju, by an aggressive floater?
Wembanyama did.
I hear posterized as posterized.
Yeah.
Did you push back when Dwight Howard won the dunk contest a couple times where he like didn't even with the Superman cape? I'm pretty sure he didn't touch the rim.
He didn't touch the rim. Not
did
a dunk.
Did you speak up then?
No, I did speak up. Good. I have a long-standing tradition of speaking up every time someone does it. Blake Griffin over Timothy Mozgov, not a dunk.
Huh.
Keon Clark over Sean Bradley, not a dunk. Trace Jackson Davis over Wemby, not a dunk.
Backhoes.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.